something like what she did too.
Right.
Yeah, and so if you got all her books, as I've read the books, I keep giving them back to them, you know,
yeah.
kind of thing. But yeah, you might That's get great. More of an idea how to compile your.
That's great. Yeah. I'll do that.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I would like to do before we get started is we actually have to get you to sign.
Oh, right.
This.
The release form.
Yeah.
I actually got this from Lester, of course. It's like,
oh, the
hey,
legal.
Lester, you release yeah. form. So he sent me yeah. the one that he uses. So. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That I haven't even
yeah, but you read,
I
just
haven't
gave
even
it
read
to you,
it,
right?
but
yeah.
you just gave it to me, and
yeah.
so
yeah.
I'm assuming you can take a look at this. And then I sent you the because this is our first one, and I'm not a big planner of things. I kind of usually let things evolve, but I do
yeah.
have a very specific intention for this project, and the intention is first and foremost to have fun. Secondly,
yeah.
It's really just about harvesting stories and. But you said it so well. It was like preserving and celebrating
yeah.
like people's stories and legacies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then creating something for the community and showing it back
yeah.
to the community. So I had given you this list of questions, but then I realized in a flash of insight today that I think for me it's more about themes. So those questions fit into a number of themes like family and home and parents and grandparents and work and money and, you know, festivals. And so I would like to, through this interview, I'd like to start with who you are, just your name and where you were born, and then move from there into, well, to ask you if you have anything that you specifically want to touch on,
mm-hmm.
and then any no-go zones, like, I don't want to talk about money, or I don't want to talk about religion, or, you know, so
yeah.
like, no-go questions that would be good to know. And then I think we'll just start there, and then I would like it to just evolve as naturally as possible. But these are some themes that I'd like to touch on over
yeah.
time.
Well, a lot of these things remind, you know, this list that I guess you put it on the internet or you emailed it to us, did you?
I emailed it to you because it's actually not my list. It's the list from the Legacy Project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you want me to?
I do want you to sign that. So you can't come back and sue me
yeah.
for showing your face to the public.
Yeah.
We're gonna hear some fun stories
So you guys probably wondering about the tech. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
It's a basic camera, so
yeah.
It's a 720.
They don't know much about
okay.
the stuff, right? So this
yeah.
is great.
Yeah, and that's what I was. Really,
yeah.
yeah, yeah.
This,
so this is
what,
doing.
What is this
it's
date?
The 18th today.
Yeah. So yeah, so this is recording the video onto a SD card. So I'll use this as the source, basic source video, and then that's going to do high quality audio. So that's yeah. So the audio is so that, like this records audio, but not that great. You know, it's kind of got this kind of tinniness going on. I don't know if you've heard that when you're watching a documentary or something, and you can barely hear people because it's all kind of like that.
That's what I'd love watching on TV is documentaries.
Yeah.
Like TVO.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, real life.
It's just, yeah. And Land and Sea, you know, that one that comes on Sundays.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the only reason I have a TV. It's just for to
yeah.
watch all this stuff, you know.
Yeah. That's why I like the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
YouTube.
Yeah, I guess
YouTube.
I'm not savvy enough on that yet. Donna
yeah.
does all that stuff
yeah.
for me. I guess if it wasn't for Donna, I
right.
might be more savvy, but
right.
well, you look it up for me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny because I asked Tammy for your email address because I misplaced it, and she's like, I didn't know my dad had an email
yeah.
address. And I was like, thanks, you're a big help. Can I just tell my guys, if at any point you need to get up and do something, please do it without interrupting, because we are going to be videoing, so unless it's an emergency. But if you're feeling too wiggly and you can't focus and you can't listen, feel free to get up, go out,
and play with
the
dog.
Absolutely. Get something out of the car to eat, whatever you need. Just remember that mm-hmm. fence is electric.
Right.
And easy to miss.
Right. Yes, electric fences are fun to play with.
Well, it isn't on now, but I think it'll fool the horse. He's
oh,
because, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, one of the insulators took off somewhere, so
oh, no.
I'll eventually find it somewhere.
Oh my god. That's one of those.
Yeah, I did have a bag on there, but it must have blew off, like
yeah.
a plastic
oh,
bag on there to let people
yeah.
know. Yeah, but I guess it must have.
I couldn't see it. It was
yeah, no, it wasn't cool. until it was over the hood that I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
We both were like, whoa,
ah.
at the same time.
I was like, oh, what a great way to start. Sorry, John.
Good thing we weren't on a motorbike.
Yeah.
Although we probably would have seen it then.
uh-huh. That's funny. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Fabulous. So.
But yeah, I didn't, I was 20 years old when I bought this property, and it was, I guess I always, you know, I'd left home at 17. My parents got super religious, the born-again believers kind of thing.
Okay.
And I was always more or less an obedient child, but I could no longer live under those rules, and so
right.
that's why I left. I was almost 18 when I left.
Where did you come from originally?
West of Owen Sound.
Okay.
In between Owen Sound and Southampton, if you look on the road map.
Okay.
And it's,
that's not
yeah.
too far away.
No.
It's,
no. But anyway, I'd been away from home for a couple of years, and or almost a couple of years, and I thought, I'd like to buy some property, and no matter what happens in life, I'll always have a place to go, because I wasn't, you know,
yeah.
thinking of settling down right then, you know. And I'll always have a place to go. So I bought this property, and then, you know, I did some logging. And my initial thought was, I was sailing on the freighters on the Great Lakes at the time,
yeah.
and I thought, I'm off every winter. And at that time, I thought I would buy a piece of property every winter with what wages I made in the summertime. And when I got about 15 places, because always, you know, I had in mind back then that this is what I wanted to do, is sustainable logging. And I thought, okay, if I had 15 pieces of property, I could log on one every year, and by the time I got down to the 15th one, I could come back and start over again and never run out. And that was my initial thing. And then the old guy that lived across the road from me at that time, he said, "Oh, you'd be foolish to put your money into that. He says you can get cutting rights from the forestry for next to nothing." So I checked it out, and at that time you could, you know. So I
yeah.
abandoned that project, but I should have carried on with that.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I could have lasted 15 years. I sailed for 10 years, off and on. You know, but but
you sailed on the Great Lakes for
yeah,
10 years.
Yeah, on
wow.
the freighters. Yeah, yeah, and yeah, that was well. That was quite an experience. And I was, that was a way back in '57, and I was on a ship. That was before they put the Seaway through, and they had the old canal, the Lachine Canal, and I forget the other canal that went down through Cornwall and places like that. And they had little locks, and the biggest ship that could go through there was 250-foot ship. And so I was on this ship that took grain from Kingston to Montreal. And so then the big ships could bring the grain down from the lakehead to the elevators at Kingston. Or Cornwall, too. They had an elevator there, too. And then the little ships could take it on down and unload it at Montreal, and the big ocean ships then could take
wow.
it from there.
Yeah.
But there was a limitation on how big the ship could be. So I was on this ship that went from just through the canal and back up again, and down and back up again. And that was all we did. And I was deckhand. And the overtime we would... And the way the Seafarers International Union had it, that if you were called out any time within 2 hours, your overtime went straight through. So it was ridiculous the way the whole thing was, that we would just, they'd be, it would be tied up at the dock. We'd be maybe anchored out, waiting for your turn to get tied to the dock, and then there was room for about 8 or 10 ships, well, depending on what lock it was, waiting your turn to get in. Well, it took less than 2 hours for a ship to go down the lock, and another one to come up through the lock before it was your turn. So they had, the union had that all figured out. And I can sleep anywhere. Like, I mean, it just, you know, if I can just drop off to sleep anywhere. But the other deckhands, there was 4 of us, and the other deckhands would just be bushed because they couldn't get to sleep that quick. And I'd be well rested. And when we get down to Montreal or get back up to Cornwall, they'd give us time off. Well, I was fully rested. I could walk down. I could do anything. You know, it's got time off. No problem. You know. But yeah, and I was, you know, taking home $450 a month. And that was a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
That was a lot of money back in 57. So I was salting it away pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah, it was quite a life. It was really, really advantageous for a single person. A married person had to have a house and family ashore, but a single person, you had your free room and board. And so whatever you got, that was it.
How old were you when you started that?
I was 18.
You were 18?
Yeah.
Was that the first thing you did when you left home?
That, and I didn't have enough. The first year, I didn't have enough. Didn't have enough time in to get unemployment insurance. So, because it was sort of a recession then. That was back in 57. A bit of a recession back then, and so the ship tied up early. And I went and got a job as a cook's helper in the hospital in Oakville. And I didn't have any criteria of, I thought, well, I'll get a job at the Ford plant. They're hiring on at a certain time. You know, when the new models come out, they hire on a bunch of people for to start the line running again. And so I thought I'd get over there real early at the Ford plant when they were hiring. And I got there, and there was a line up from here to that barn across the road.
Oh,
and so I was there for about an hour and a half, and the guys were talking, did you ever work here before? No, I didn't. Oh, you got no chance of getting on, because I've worked here before, and I don't think I'm going to get on because I don't have enough seniority. Well, I said, well, there's no sense in me standing in this lineup. So downtown I went, and went to the unemployment office, and the unemployment, to see if there's any work around there. So the unemployment office, they said, oh, we got, do you know anything about cooking? Oh, yeah, I do. And which I didn't. And well, there's an opening there for a cook's helper up at the Oakville Trafalgar Memorial Hospital. So anyway, I went up there. And, I mean, you know, there's only, experience of work I ever had was working on the Great Lakes, decking on the Great Lakes, and working on the farm. What credentials did I have, experience did I have of ever working, you know? So that was the only chance I had. So anyway, I bluffed my way into this job. There was a lady that was there. There was the head cook was away, and she was taking his place, and she hired me on. And oh, it was ridiculous anyway. And they had this great big grill. It must have been huge, you know, and cooking hamburgers on it, you know, and I didn't have the idea of rotating everything, you know, and they were sizzling and burning. This lady came to me and says, you never cooked before, did you? Oh, yeah. No, I can tell what you're doing there that you don't know anything about cooking. I said, now you tell me the truth there and I'll help you out. So if it wasn't for her, I would have lost the job, you know.
Was she someone you worked with, or was she the boss?
Somebody I worked with, yeah. Wow. It was one of the cooks that were there. But anyway, later on, at Christmas time, this lady that hired me on called me into the office. And so there was, she had mistletoe on top and over the door. And so I guess you're supposed to, you know, you can kiss somebody under the mistletoe. So she nailed me and gave me a great big smooch, you know. And I broke loose, you know, and took off. She says, if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have got this job. I go, oh, crap. I'm going to lose my job, you know. And I just bought this, I just bought this 55 Plymouth, which is only 2 years old, two-year car. I'm going to lose my car. Shit. But she never pursued it, you know. So I can understand women that are harassed. That way I can understand that, you know. That I more or less went through the same thing. So yeah, but it was quite a learning experience. Learn how to be a cook's helper, and potatoes. Yeah, potatoes. They had this potato peeler, and you dump all these potatoes into this potato peeler, and it was spinning around like this and spraying water in at the same time. And I left them in there too long. I looked in; they were just a bunch of little marbles. All that was left. Yeah. And then why they had this assembly line, there's another funny thing. I don't know if you ever seen the I Love Lucy thing about being on an assembly line.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it was just like that, you know. When I seen that episode on TV, it just reminded me of what I went through, you know. These trays, that can read the tray, you know, mashed potatoes, peas, or whatever, you know. And you'd get behind. Well, you set that plate aside, set that tray aside, and trying to catch up, you know. And I had trays and running up there and slipping and sliding, and the potatoes that have spilled on the floor. And it was not funny at the time.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It was very serious at the time. But you look back on it, was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's and then I went back sailing in the next spring.
Did you get hired back on as the?
No, not on the same ship. No. You sit in the union hall, and you wait for these jobs to come up.
Oh, okay.
And I guess it was 2 years, and I'd always, you know, I'd get fed up with it there and pay off in the middle of the summer and hang out on the beach somewhere and have lots of fun, and then you go back to the union hall and get on another
so by
ship.
Paying off, you mean like,
well, just quitting,
just say I'm done.
Yeah,
pay
yeah,
me for my
quitting,
work
yeah,
and then
yeah,
go hang out.
Yeah, yeah. And
where
so,
were some places that you would hang out, like where are some of those?
Toronto. And so this is, yeah, and I used to go uptown while waiting for a job at the union hall. I go uptown and go into these movie houses on Queen Street. And in the middle of the day, and you'd get out of the movie house in the middle of the day, you'd be so disoriented because it felt like night when you're in the movie house, you know. Wow, it's daylight. No, where did I leave the car? You know, and you'd be just, oh, wow. Okay, how did I approach this movie house? You know, you have to walk out to take a look, you know, and then you'd finally be able to track down your car, you know. But yeah, there was no parking lots back in them days like they have now, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just in some alleyway or somewhere where you'd find a place to park, you know. Yeah, just.
I also remember the movie theaters that they would let you out through the back. Like you would come
sometimes,
the
yeah,
and
yeah,
then you'd be totally confused,
lost.
Yeah,
because like, where the heck am I?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. You'd go out the other end there. Wow, okay, there's the front of this. That's got to be the front there. So
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd love to back up a little bit to your childhood. Was it on a farm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we grew up on the farm.
Can you talk a little bit about some of those?
Okay,
farmers?
I can remember I was about 10 years old, and it was an extra dry year, and it was so dry that we would take barrels on the wagon, a tractor and wagon, and go to the lake, Chesley Lake, that's what it's called. And fill up, and we didn't have pumps, so it was just bailing it into these barrels and bringing them home for the livestock.
Wow.
And that was before we got the drilled well, so we had a dug well, and it went dry that year.
Okay.
And they thought they were going to lose the crops, and we were sitting on the front porch there and listening to the radio, and the rain started coming.
Wow.
And wow, and the fiddle tune come on the radio. And my father grabbed my mother by the hand, and they ran out, and they danced around in the rain. Yeah. And, and us kids, I was only about your age then. There's Mom always giving us shit for playing out in the rain. Look. Yeah, that's look great. What they're doing. Yeah. But they were so, I guess they were so happy that the rain came. That
yeah.
That's what they felt like doing.
That's making me think of your music. And does that come from your family?
My mother played piano, and her mother played piano, and my grandfather played, on my father's side, my grandfather played the accordion and the mouth organ a bit. And that was the button accordion, and button accordion and mouth organ are very related because it's one note drawn, pulling out, and another note pulling in on the same button. So the mouth organ is like that, in and out on the same hole, makes two different notes. Right. And so that was closely related, but that's what he did. And and my oldest brother started playing guitar, and my younger brother than me started playing guitar. And I thought, well, they don't need another guitar. And then any place we were hanging out, all these guitars, they don't need another guitar. So I started playing the mouth organ first, I guess, and I used to play the mouth organ walking to school, and it was a one-room schoolhouse. And walking to school, I would play my mouth organ on the way to school. And getting to the school, of course, every kid wanted to play my mouth organ. And it would get dropped in the dirt, you know, and then it'd be ruined, you know. So I smartened up after a while, and so there used to be this hollow fence post there with a big knot hole in. So I put my mouth organ in there and pick it up on the way back home.
Nice.
And so that's how I learned to play the mouth organ. Yeah, and the thing about the mouth organ, you can play that and walk at the same time. And then I took up fiddle after that. And yeah, you had one question there. What's your most memorable Christmas gift? Was the fiddle. And I remember, we had this spare bedroom in the house, and they'd hide our Christmas presents in, and I never liked going to look at what I was going to be getting. So my little brother went in, he'd already seen it. He went in, plink, 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 he was picking on the strings. Can you guess what it is now? No, I don't know what it is. Well, he'd go back in again, plink, plink, plink. Can you guess it now?
Hilarious.
Yeah.
How old were you when you got the fiddle?
I was 12. Oh. Yeah. So, yeah. And on about, I guess it's on about February or March, learn to play the fiddle and make some awful weird sounds because there's no frets like on the guitar, eh? And my father said, I don't know if I should have bought you that thing for Christmas. So I go upstairs and learn it up there. Work away on it up there. But yeah.
Awesome.
And then, of course, there's banjo after that. But later on, I took up guitar, and I guess I was in my mid-20s when I took up guitar. Because there were songs to be sung there that didn't go with the banjo.
Yeah, guitar is much more universal.
Yeah.
That's why so many people play it, is because it's...
Yeah, you can accompany yourself singing with it.
Yeah.
Where banjo, you can too, but there's certain things that banjo just
sound.
Does not cut it, you know, the way a guitar does. Yeah.
Tell me about the school, the one-room schoolhouse.
Oh, yeah. It was...
My kids have never been to school. They're homeschooled.
Yeah.
So they've never been to any school.
Well, a one-room schoolhouse, all 8 grades are in the one room. They're in the one room, and if you've ever been to the Muskell Hall up here, that was a schoolhouse.
Oh, wow.
And I can't think of any... I think the one in Lake St. Peter, that one place there is a schoolhouse.
The
so you have a nice...
Community center? Like what's now the
center? Yeah. Yeah, and so you have an idea of what one-room schoolhouses are like, the size of them, you know, they're all more or less, and the great big great big box stove in the middle there for your heat. And in a way, the first year I went to school, we had an unqualified teacher, I guess it was. But anyway, she didn't do any work with us grade ones, and there was only two of us in that grade. And so we just put up our hand. Can we go out and play? Oh, yeah, she can go out and play. So we'd be out and playing. Recess had come. The bell would ring. Are you coming in? No, the teacher said we could stay out and play. So then, the next year, was a different teacher next year. And, well, do you know this? She'd write this thing on the blackboard. Duh, we'd be looking at it there. We didn't. You kids are stupid. Do you know this? You're really stupid. Right back into grade one years ago. You know, you're not, you know, she passed us into grade two, right? So right, there was no kindergarten in that school. So right back into grade one years ago. So I went home and told my father this thing. And I didn't like school. It was too structured for me, you know. And you're going to go to school until you get your grade 10. I don't care how long it takes. Well, wow. I better smarten up here. So I made two grades that year. That year I got two grades, but the guy that was with me couldn't get it. You know, so I went on there. And then the next year, some new pupils started. And this one girl was, and my brother, oh no, she started, and she was one grade behind me. So when I was in grade three, my younger brother, that was 2 years younger than me, he started. Well, she moved them up. She moved this one lady, or one girl that was below me, up with me, because there's only the two of us in this grade.
Yeah.
And moved my brother, along with two other ones in his class, up with me. And I thought, oh, shit. There's my little brother, only one grade behind me. Okay, I can do the same thing. I can skip up another grade. So I used to do work with the grade above me then.
Yeah.
And the teacher would come along there and she would crumple all my work up, you know. And she was holding me back because she wanted to have at least two people in this one grade, you know. And so I was held back. Yeah. And I was the only one in my family that was born out at home birth. And what happened there was, it was my birthday's in March, and there was a big snowstorm came through, and the doctor, they couldn't get out to the hospital, and the doctor couldn't get in, and so I was born at home.
Wow.
And then another factor of being born on that day, scarlet fever was going around, and they were going around inoculating the kids for scarlet fever. And a storm came through, and they never got in until I had turned four, I think it was. They're inoculating everything under three and under.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, I turned four. And my mother begged the doctor for to inoculate me, because they should have been there before I did turn four, because it was a week before they can get back in. No, they wouldn't. And I got it.
You got it?
Yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah, I got the scarlet fever. And, yeah, they said I had a temperature of 106. And,
how was that handled? Like, did you go to the hospital, or were you quarantined? Like, what
Hold
was...
on. 2 seconds? Yeah. I'm just going to cycle this.
Hold on. We have a couple questions about that.
Yeah.
Like,